What is good, everybody? We are back. We are back in studio because, you know, last week was, got hit with the COVIDzle. And luckily I am back. I am on the mend. I'm chilling. And
you're not lying to me, right?
I'm lying to you about what? About not
being back? Did you just coax me in here by saying that? Now I am.
Yeah, that's the type of person I am.
Sounds like it.
Thank you for just checking in.
Spreader.
Just checking in to see where our friendship is at. He's like, well, you know, Christian, he's cool enough to give me COVID. Welcome, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco. I'm joined by dear friend, the homie who's been, joining us on the show.
Stopping by.
While Alexis has been away. David Goss, everybody. David, how are you doing?
A little more tired than I expected. Okay. Showed up to the restaurant for Copa America around 6, 8 o'clock game, maybe extra time, be home by 11.
Mm-hmm. You think, they say 8 p.m. kickoff time, and the real kickoff time, not the Fox start coverage time that they tried to trick you. Yeah. We all know how it works. I get the business, okay? You got ads to sell. I understand.
Game starts at 2 p.m. Oh, really? I thought it was a night game, yeah.
We're doing 8 hours of coverage, all right? It's going to be great. But we did all expect it was going to be an 8 p.m. Kickoff. So we'll talk about Copa America and the madness that was. But we have to start with the Euros. But before we start there, I just want to make sure because you got a new project.
I do.
We were sort of teasing it, last time. Okay.
Just a little bit of one arm off, but not the full thing.
Okay. It was the foreplay.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So it was great. But now it has been announced and you have been working on it. You and Tom Bogert and Jordan Angeli is part of it as well. Soccer-wise, please, real quick, let people know where and what it is and how they can check it out.
We are covering soccer in North America, men's and women's, across all the leagues, all the national teams. We go live 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern time on YouTube and Twitch.
I've been in the chat a little bit.
I appreciate that. I also appreciate if you're one of the ones being like, your internet's trash. So that's always a fun
one. I did notice that was one of the things I was going to talk to you about.
Yeah, I got bad internet. That's what I do. And it comes out as a podcast as well. Soccer-wise, one word on all the socials, we're Soccer-wise HQ. Mm-hmm. So Tom comes on twice a week. We talk MLS mainly, national teams as well. Jordan comes on with me on Wednesdays. We do NWSL. And we're, of course, going to do Olympics, U.S. Women's National Team, all of that as well.
And Tom Bogert leaving the Athletic?
Yeah.
Damn.
Groundswells. Earthquakes. I got so many texts. I got more texts when Tom left to be like, whoa, you guys snagged Tom, versus when I announced my own thing and people were like, oh, congrats. Yeah,
they're like, wow, okay, who cares? What about Tom? Yeah. Do you know him? Can you give me his number?
People obsessed with transfers. That's what people love.
People, this is a real thing, especially, you know, during the summer when there's no club football or less club football in Europe.
Unless you like MLS or NWSL, then you should listen to soccer.
But even still, the transfer window is about to open.
It's all people want.
Everybody's in the work. But there's something, and this is, I think, transfer news is the reason it's so addicting is because it provides that hope.
Yeah.
For your club, 100%. You're just like, oh my God, this is, if they just bring in this one guy or girl, then that's it.
It's the day before Christmas where you're like, I'm going to get a million presents. All the boxes are for me. To be clear, I've never celebrated Christmas before. I'm just guessing here, but I'm close.
That's basically, you nailed it.
Okay, thanks. And it's just like,
that's going to come back on Christmas. Yeah. I know it.
and then that's what you're hoping for.
Exactly.
And then Then when you actually heard a funny English podcast talking about Gareth Southgate before the final.
Yeah.
And they were like, the thing Gareth Southgate has given England fans that they hate the most is success.
Yeah.
Because they can't complain about not being bad anymore. So transfers, nothing tangible. It's just, we will be good. We could be good. We might be good.
Yeah. It feels
actually being good or bad is the worst case scenario for most fans.
No, we don't want to see the actual like result on the pitch and whatever, but there's something before the season begins. Oh, or even during the season, this guy's going to fix all our problems.
Team's on a 5-game losing streak and it's like, but transfer rumors.
Dude, I'm on the like, why doesn't NYCFC just sign James Rodriguez? We just saw what he did for Colombia. He can do that right for him.
Talos Magno for James Rodriguez, straight up.
Straight up, that's a good deal, okay?
Sao Paulo probably would do that. They'd be like, yeah, that's sick.
So let's start with the Euros and discuss that final first, which is just an exciting thing to have two finals on the same day. And we all sort of knew, you know, we've all sort of been making jokes about the casualness and the sort of the elegance of experiencing the Euros and the vibes of experiencing Copa America. And both finals couldn't have been any sort of
like
different.
Straight in line with what they should
be. Exactly on brand with all the madness. So we'll get to Copa America later, but let's just start with the Euros. So congratulations to Spain. Spain wins the Euros 2-1, and we all sort of expected Spain to win, but I think the interesting part here is the fact that England tied it up, right? And because you never sort of got the sense that was going to happen, and then Cole Palmer, he did the thing we all wanted to see, with the thing we've kind of been wanting throughout the whole the Euros with England there, and it was a great goal, but I think again it was that hope,
right?
That if through, you know, and I've been talking about throughout these whole Euros and when it came to England, like, you know, does Harry Kane need to start every game? And everybody was like, but it's Harry Kane. Yeah. How can you not? And blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, then Ollie Watkins gets that game winner and the whole thing. And this one felt like, this is where I give credit to Gareth Southgate. He started Luke Shaw, which I think that was the right move. That was the Trippier first half, and Shaw second half was look, and I imagine the main concern was fitness and stuff like that. But I thought that was the better move. And I thought England were much better with Luke Shaw there. Or even just a left-footed player in a left-footed player position. And it made a huge difference. But Spain, the game got a little bit not disorganized or I don't know. It was just... To me, the intensity and quality, like the goal from Nico Williams, was just I don't think they got back in that second half and were just ready to and focus or whatever.
So the craziest part about that is Rodri comes off at halftime. So you're thinking Spain has to find their feet, right? Like Lamine Yamal and Nico Williams are what, 17 now? 17 and 20, right. 21 or 22. They're in their first final. They're in this big moment. Rodri's the one they're leaning on. So they come out at halftime. Rodri subbed off and you're like, uh-oh. Like Spain's going to have to refine themselves.
Exactly.
And then they came out. The aggressors, they were on the game. They're aware. And England's the one who walks out. And so it's like, if you went into this, going into this game, I think Spain were favorites, not massive favorites, but they were favorites. And I think one of the few things you would have said was, well, England has more experience. They've been in a final at the international level. Yeah. Most of the players in that team have played in finals at the club level, and they are a little bit older as a team. Even though England is a young group, they are older than this Spanish group for the most part. So that's what's really like incredible is Spain almost beat England at their one thing that you thought England would have an advantage of coming into this game. And once they score that goal, it felt like it would be over. So credit to England that they like fought back at that point. But they were the worst team. And I think everyone was the worst team, right? When you look at the run Spain went through.
Yeah. Versus anybody besides Spain, essentially. Yeah. Yeah. They were
so like England was exactly who they were. They were one goal worse than the best team in this tournament. Yeah. They went to back-to-back finals. They are one of the two or three best teams in Europe. And like, they stand where they stand today as they did 24 hours ago and 48 hours ago. It's just sometimes it gets exposed in the game and it sucks for fans.
Yeah. I mean, there was just a weird sort of decision making. I know Bellingham dealt with a little bit of criticism, but there were a couple moments of like flashes of brilliance, but then just a few of like, why are you taking 2-3 touches there and trying to dribble around the guy? Just make the easy pass. Why are you giving the ball away? There was just a lot of like sort of unnecessary giveaways. But when you watch England, and probably more than almost, I can't think of exactly another team that sort of plays this way, but you sort of see they're worried about the criticism they're going to receive as they're actually playing the game. There isn't a level, and maybe this is on Southgate, but there isn't this level of like freedom and even fun. I mean, you saw Nico Williams. I think there was a chance that he missed or something like that. And he like smiled at Pickford or something like right. that. And it's just like, any England player takes a shot, they're just like, oh no, what the hell am I doing? Like, there's no joy to their game. Maybe, and probably Saka shows this more than anybody else, but for the most part, you see the pressure on them as they're playing in each decision that they make. And it's...
But here's the thing though, not to cut you off, but like, that all still feels better than England did 10 years ago, pre-Southgate. Because, like, I think that's the nature of playing for England. It is like, you can't do right. Because unless you're perfect, it's like, well, we have to be better, right? Think about Gerrard and Lampard and that team and all of that. And then after that, the teams that were built around Rooney. Think about the 2010 World Cup, 2014 World Cup. Like, those England teams were miserable. They were miserable being on those England teams and like trying to win and trying to do enough. And what Southgate originally did was he like unlocked a lot of that. He like took a lot of the pressure. He made the game fun again. He brought a lot of young players in and gave them hope and like gave them belief to do it. I just think the problem becomes as you go through the tournaments and you don't reset with a new manager and say, oh, we're on a new timeline now. We do new things. It just be this one became like, well, you can't lose. Rather than coming out and playing on the front foot and saying, how do we win this? Yeah. It was like this whole tournament, England played in a way that they were scared to lose. And they knew that if they didn't make mistakes, they were good enough to win.
Yeah. And it's just,
and they just like limped over.
But it's so remarkable given the youth of especially the wingers and Lamine Yamal and Nico Williams. Nico is what, 19, 20?
Yeah, I think he's 20.
Lamine being, 16 years old throughout most of this tournament.
He had finals. Nico Williams is 22, which I didn't understand. He just turned 22 3 days ago. His birthday got covered because Lamine's birthday was the big one.
But again, there's them two played with a certain freedom and fun that you didn't really see, what was the formation for England? I mean, they didn't play 4-3-3.
This one was the three in the 4-2-3-1.
Saka and Bellingham didn't necessarily play with that level of like sort of fun and sort of attack. Like that's the thing. It's like there was even those 1v1s on the wings. When England had those opportunities, you'd never, it happened a couple of times. Saka got that goal, the left-footed goal that went far post, here and there. But for those two guys in particular, there was like, you can sense the genuine threat that something could happen. And, the goal Nico Williams scored, like, some people are sort of highlighting Kyle Walker because it's like, yes, he is the better defender out of all the the right backs that they have. And it's just like, where is he exactly? Like what? He was trying to focus on the player running in the middle. And it's just like the decisions at certain moments were just kind of wild. And the second goal came from the same exact sort of spot where Cucurella. And Stones kind of like not really paying attention to where he sort of is positioned, not noticing that there's probably somebody running behind him. Gahee is letting
the one that holds
Oyarzabal go because he's like, oh, he's ahead of me. He's probably gonna be offside. And it's just these little margins, these little decisions. And we can talk about them, the attacking issues because they haven't really scored many goals throughout this whole tournament. But defensively, that's like where you would think they would at least not give up a goal like that in that moment. And that's like kind of the disappointing part of just like they don't do it again, but they don't do it. It wasn't even like the heartbreak of penalties.
Yeah.
It was just like the poor like I don't know how to, if is it a failure? Because I see like the Mark Goldbridge screaming at the screen and whatever, and it's entertaining. I'm gonna watch it. Like, I get you, you know, I understand people's like,
they get a rage content,
they get frustrated with like, oh, who, I hate this guy, this guy's a bellend and blah blah blah, and it's just like, bro, I watch it, I don't want to tell you, just like, you know, some people love the Kardashians and why, I'm like, Goldbridge is my junk food.
Yeah, so here's my thing on the failure. The failure was 21. Like, the mistake was they played Italy at home and they should have won.
Yeah.
Because they should, again, they should not have beaten Spain. Yeah. Spain are the better team. Spain is the best team in this tournament. The run Spain went on to get to the final is the most impressive run I think we've ever seen in a knockout tournament, specifically like the way their structure, the way their schedule was and all of that stuff. And so it's tough to say it's a failure because in abstract, they shouldn't have won this game. But it's back-to-back finals. That's where the failure part starts to come in of like this stretch over time. You were supposed to win something and you don't know that you'll get back. It's like, this may have been the last chance. Yeah. And that part, I think, is that the part that's really hard to walk away from. And I think they said Gareth Southgate was like very quiet post game and was like, I don't really know what the future is. And I don't know what happens. And you're like, yeah, I don't think his game plan was to go in and lose another final. So he was thinking he's coming off a victorious win. They've like reset all this stuff, right? They've changed the reality of the club or the team and all that, those things, and all of that failed. But again, you go into this and you're like, if you had to pick two of the four wingers, I think you're picking Yamal and Williams, right? If you had to pick the center mids, you're picking Rodri. I'm picking Sergio Ruiz at this point, probably picking Danny Olmo, except for over Jude Bellingham, over any of them. So like in that front six, I would argue Spain has four of the six best players in those positions. And how are you, if you don't have overwhelming
Fabian
talent,
Ruiz, right? That's what you meant?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, my bad.
That's what you're referring to. All good.
Clearly he played so well.
Spain looked fantastic throughout this entire tournament. And England 100% did not. It's like pretty remarkable that they were in the final as well. I mean, to credit to England, because I mean, several teams were really, all the teams that we thought were going to be good at the Euros were not good at the Euros.
Belgium, Portugal, flopped.
Just no goals, barely sort of France. Any excitement. France was probably one of the bigger disappointments. Yeah. Who were just like, they couldn't find a way to even create many chances. So that
Didier Deschamps right now is the godfather of the international manager, which is my team sucks, but like, I'm not going to get fired. Like, if the Gareth Southgate, Greg Berhalter shaking hands meme now is a thing.
Sure.
Deschamps is standing behind them being like, perfect. Yes. Make everyone hate your team, but win just enough that no one can complain.
I saw all the reports about that they wanted Southgate back even before the result of the final. They were saying like that we want him back regardless. And he's already, what, been there 8 years?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, it's similar to like kind of the Berhalter thing where it's just like, yes, he has brought success. I mean, Berhalter brought some trophies in CONCACAF, but it's just like, how long are we going to do this for? Let's just see something else. Yeah. And I think that's kind of what England, I don't know how, of course, you applaud Southgate. You appreciate what he's done. There are people who don't, because if they didn't get any trophies, then it doesn't matter. But whatever.
Classic English fans with all their trophies lying around, rings culture.
But to get to two Euros finals in a row is, I mean, if you know, all the people that are like, oh, Euros are more competitive than Copa America, right? That's always like the big talking point. Remember Mbappe made a comment about that as well, about even qualifying for the World Cup.
We'll see you in La Paz, Mbappe. If you want to talk your talk, come to La Paz. I dare you.
Let's see how you enjoy, you know, 3 foot tall grass and trying to kick a ball around.
After you've eaten a meal of llama blood at full altitude, then you could talk your talk.
Okay. But this is where, you know, people should treat Southgate with that level of appreciation and respect of like, well, he did get to two finals in a row for the Euros. So because it's quote unquote harder to win over in this continent. So that's it. He should be treated with a fair amount of respect. I don't know. Like I look at the lineup and I'm like, what could he have really done? I don't know that just. Spain were too good. I mean, what I'm looking at the lineup. We're looking at the lineup here. Like, Where could he have made some kind of different decision that would have led to a different result? I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're kind of in a tough spot. Also, at this point where it's like if he throws something new against the wall and it doesn't work, you've not practiced it, you've not tried it, like all of those things. I think there's a lot of complaints about the use of Trent Alexander-Arnold, which I think is fair. It was he had an idea and it didn't work.
Yeah.
So like that's on Southgate because he tried something and they wasted some group stage games, high pressure games, moments where you could try new things on that. And then he never gave Trent a chance at actually playing right back or right wing back or whatever you want. He brought Luke Shaw, who wasn't healthy. So then he had to manage through that. That's your own decision. Like you don't have to bring an injured player. He would probably argue, well, there was no other better option. I think when I look at the team on the field in the final and over the course of the tournament, I think you have the persona of Phil Foden and then the performance of Phil Foden.
Yeah.
Those are two completely different
Kane
people.
Kane and Foden were, I mean, I'm not going to say they were awful, but they were just...
Well, they were both invisible.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can't have two passengers in a game like this, where you talked about the small margins and everything has to be perfect and you're playing against the best team in the best form and all these things. You cannot carry other players. And it's like, well, Foden had to play out on the left so much. It's like, get out of here. You're a professional attacking player. You can't start on the left every once in a while and still perform. Then then you don't deserve to be in this team and you're not good enough. And Bellingham, I think there were struggles, but I thought in the first half and some of the second half as well, there was like a few moments that England almost created stuff when Bellingham like pressed himself and forced turnovers and whatever. And it was like, okay, he's struggling on the ball. He's not getting touches where he wants. He made something else happen. And Foden, you could never say that about. It was, if I can get it on the run exactly where I want it and beat two defenders and get into the exact shooting position I want, I can be dangerous. Otherwise, I'm not a part of the team. And so I thought that was really tough. And that was one of those examples, I think, where maybe Southgate, because of the culture he's trying to build, he got lost in saying, like, I can't just start benching guys because... like the guys believing in me and wanting to be here and all these things, that's a huge part of it. And that's one of the, that's why you don't always want to have a manager that players are friends with or like. Yeah. It's a thing we're having in the conversation we're having here in the US a lot right now is the players voted for Berhalter. And it's like, great. You shouldn't always love the person who's in charge of telling you to sit down.
Yeah. The conversations now around Phil Foden are like, is Pep Guardiola creating these like system guys? Like they, cause it's also, you see what he does for Man City and against Premier League clubs day in and day out. And you're just like, of course he's going to, maybe he won't do it to this degree, but he's going to eat a little bit for England. And it's just like, no, he's not eating at all. There's just really nothing. And this is, you know, I pointed out about like, you know, players missing chances and not smiling or anything. And Foden is like notorious, right? When he missed, you can see him blame himself. You can see him, you can see all the frustration. The body language is awful. As far as just like enjoying being out there, that's kind of what you see. And yeah, man, it's just like, you know, if Kane and Foden show up even a little bit in pretty much any of the knockout game, even if in the group stage, Kane got, I think, what, he got two goals?
I think three. I think he ended up tied for Golden Boot.
Okay. So yeah. He got the penalty.
Which they also kindly just allowed everyone to live on.
So
I think six people won the Golden Boot in the
Somebody's
end.
Somebody's chiseling all these boots. I was like, damn, man, I got to make all these damn boots.
You guys only ordered one, so we're going to have to go into the back.
Okay. I'm going to have to make one out of cardboard because I don't know. We ran out of gold.
The Georgian center forward and then Kane, Musiala, Ivan.
Own goal was really
own
the
goal was the champion.
Was the champion, yeah. With like eight or seven,
which is huge.
Just huge. So it's not. It's like Kane had were two penalties or one. I know the one was like just a tap in that landed at his feet.
So, and he had the penalty against the Netherlands in the foul he drew because he's a diver. No, I'm just kidding.
Because I mean that was. I mean I thought it was a penalty. What?
You did?
You didn't think it was?
I'm fine.
I think if it was studs to the top of the foot, I would say I would call that anywhere else on the pitch.
Yeah.
If it was like side of the foot, top of the foot, literally any other part, that's to me that was a foul.
So all of that I'm fine with. The only part I think was wrong was it wasn't called on the field, and I don't think it's a clear and obvious error.
Okay. Yeah, I'm fine with that too.
The referee saw the play And I don't think it's like, oh, there's contact you were unaware of.
Yeah.
I think the referee judged it like not a foul. And then they brought back and they were like, well, actually, when we zoom in here, the stud is actually exposed at 63 degrees, not 61.
Yeah.
And the 2 degrees becomes a foul and whatever else.
I mean, look,
so yeah, I'm fine with that. I do agree with the fact that like that gets called at midfield most of the time.
Yeah.
And I am normally a proponent of like, if it's a foul, it's a foul everywhere. So I can't be the like, for me, not a pen guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause even there were a lot of the English pundits that were like, we got lucky. That was not a foul at all. Like they just could, the game's gone, the whole thing. So the one thing I want to point out also with Cucurella was Gary Neville was doing his punditry, and we all love all the stuff he does on Sky Sports. But they were asking him if he thought Spain could win the title, win the Euros. And he says, quote, I think Cucurella is one of the reasons I think Spain probably can't go all the way. And, you know, Marco Cucurella saw that. he reposted on his Instagram stories with the quote, we went all the way, Gary.
Hell,
thanks for your support. You love to see it. They'll you know, cross paths out in London when Gary Neville's calling some game for something. But this is they doubted him. Cucurella also was, I mean, he was incredible in the game. I think, you know, we all get sort of lost in like we watch them play for in the Premier League, and we see them play for Chelsea, and Chelsea are like
a train wreck.
Yeah, they've been a nightmare with the, you know, they're not a great team, and we sort of think like, oh, that's who they are. But dude was a beast, and not only was he a beast, but he was also, you know, he did not necessarily dark arts per se, but he, any slight graze on his face, I'm going to the ground. We're stopping plays.
But also like throws his body around. He's going to get touched all the time.
Yeah, you hit me with your elbow that I threw my face at it. Yes, but it's your elbow.
Yeah.
Why would you do that with your elbow?
Oh, if someone cleared it out, let me run into a player while going to pick up the throw.
My man risks life and limb.
So I will say this. This was the player he was at Getafe.
Okay.
Which they were, I think his final year there, they were like, I think they made Champions League or Europe. They were borderline. It was like one of those years where team had a special year and then everyone got sold because everyone looked good. And he's only 25, by the way, still, which blows my mind because
he looks older, though.
Well, yeah, he's carrying some year energy.
I don't know if it's the hair. The hairstyle also makes him look older. There's just a, like, he feels like a guy that's been playing professional football for years and years.
And he's probably been playing for 10 years because that's what these guys do.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's one of those guys. And I think there's a few of them this tournament. I mean, we'll talk about James Rodriguez in a little bit of like, you know, everyone gives up on people really quickly. And it's like a lot of these situations are a train wreck. And so it's like, it's amazing how quickly the conversation shifts from this player is unplayable to this player is the reason a team is good, right? Like, go back, 4 or 5 years and talk about Luke Shaw to any Man U fan. It's like a meme and he's a joke, whatever. And now it's like, well, they had a chance in the final because they started Luke Shaw. And you're like, we do that really quickly, which is a frustrating thing. And I think a few of these guys on the Spain team have been a part of that, where it's like they didn't go to the right spot, and now they've resurfaced.
Morata's, but he was at Chelsea, right? Yeah,
he's been everywhere. He just got bought again. Milan just bought him.
That's right,
to replace Giroud.
Yeah,
he scored one goal the whole tournament, but he was the captain who lifted the trophy. It's wild.
Yeah, it's and people like, you know, I think we're at definitely more at a place where the Premier League is so popular. Everybody watches it, and we think that this is the standard of football all over the world, and that if the best players are here, then they're going to bring that to their international sides and blah, blah, blah. But Cucurella has faced all these guys in England. He knows them. He knows what it's sort of not only their tendencies, but he knows, and some of them are his teammates. Yeah. He knows maybe how to get under their skin, maybe or whatever, or just like, or really bring a certain level of chippiness to a game.
Especially in a team where like Nico and Yamal are not going to do that.
We'll talk about Copa America in a little bit, but this is where I'm like, I want to see some of this in the Euros.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want, look, it was a bloodbath, obviously, for, you know, in Copa America, and it was obviously absurd, a lot of the outside stuff. But even on the pitch, there was a lot of scuffles, so a lot of fights, and maybe it doesn't need to be that degree, but like, yo,
let's get a little, let's care a little
let's
bit.
Let's care a little bit. Yeah. And this is where, and like, and I don't, and again, I don't, it's not
listen,
that.
Listen, the game's gone. You're saying the game's gone.
But it's like, I don't see that from these English players to that degree. And maybe that is just like the, an English, a cultural thing that they're not
going to. Keep calm and carry on.
Yeah, not going to express themselves in that way. But the, it's just like, you saw that a little bit more from the Spanish side. And I think that's maybe what leads to, well, we talk about all these margins, but that mentality or even that emotion can help you lift a trophy as well. So, I mean, look, whatever. It's subjective. It's my feeling. I don't need to see, you know.
It's not subjective that Spain won because Spain did win.
They did win.
They won the whole thing. They set every record, right? They won all. Well, part of the records are fake because the tournament has a new structure. But they're the first team to win seven games because they're the first one to play seven games. Yeah, but whatever. But they won every game.
Yeah.
They set the goals record. The teams they beat on the road there are absurd. Like the run. You go all the way back to the fact that they were basically in the group of death.
Yeah.
Right. Like they were in a group with the reigning champions, Italy, as bad as Italy has been up and down, and Croatia, who go to every final.
Yeah.
They got out of that and you're like, oh, okay, now it gets easier. Georgia was like a weird fun thing. They play the host Germany, mm-hmm. who were probably the second best team in this tournament. Then you play France, who are probably the best team in Europe.
Yeah.
And then you go to the final and you have to face an England team that's been going back to back finals and has a little experience and all these things.
Yeah.
I think part of it with Spain is like, there is a DNA to the way they play the sport. And you see some frustrations, I think, in a lot of national teams where like players coming from different club backgrounds play different styles. And now you're trying to meld it all under one. And I think for Spain, and a lot of this is newer, but you are looking at the legacy of tiki-taka and all these things, which is like all of these players come up with the same technique and the same ideas. And so even when there are things that are different, Cucurella is a huge part of that. Yamal and Nico, where they're more direct, which I think is the element that this team had that the last 8-9 years hasn't had, where it's like they pass back and forth, they're back and forth. And then like Russia scores and they're like, yeah. What happened? It's like, yeah, because like they just keep doing the same thing. That's changed. But like even at its core, all those players see it all the same. Right. And when they're panicked and they're under pressure, it's like boom, 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 three passes out of pressure. And they're like, oh, all of these guys see that. And it's on the women's side. So it's like we're talking in the culture of the country.
100%.
Even in Brazil, it's not like that, where it's like players that come through at Flamengo and Fluminense see it differently than Vasco da Gama and Santos, even with the like Samba, all of that.
Yeah.
And I don't know that any country in the world, maybe Portugal, but they just don't have the same population, are on the level that this team is on.
Amazing. Last thing, Rodri Ballon d'Or, you think he gets it?
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't know that anyone else is obvious. And I think we've reached the point where it always goes to an internet. The years there are international tournaments, it always goes to someone who's a part of winning that.
Sure. It always feels weird when like the Ballon d'Or winner is not somebody that has like 55 goals or whatever. Now you have to be like, oh, do I have to understand this game at a different level?
If you're not breaking records that were just set 2 years ago, how are we supposed to define you?
All right, let's chat Copa America, because it was literally there's almost so much to parse through. So we'll be right back and we'll talk about that. Welcome back, everybody.
That's new. You didn't notice that?
No, I didn't know about that.
We got the Yahoo Yodel.
Did you record that?
No. No, they got, you know, they had somebody on hand.
One of the top yodelers.
Okay. We brought them, you know, we spent a lot of money.
I would assume your yodeling budget is pretty robust. I know Alexis a little bit. That guy.
We have to prioritize certain things. Yeah, clearly, that was one of them. But let's talk Copa America. Congratulations, Argentina, on winning back to back, which is remarkable. It's what England couldn't do back to back. You know, so Argentina winning. I was surprised. I thought Colombia were the better team throughout the entire tournament. You know, we were talking about the Euros and teams kind of underperforming, being very underwhelming. Argentina at Copa America was definitely that. Just like, you know, Messi never felt like sort of himself. And I don't know if he was dealing with that nagging injury from one of the earlier games. But Colombia were just firing on all cylinders. They looked great. They looked, not only did they look great, they were having fun.
Everyone's
the dancing.
Yeah. Maluma's in the crowd.
Maluma is there.
Life is good.
I forgot the guy's name. that did the hype song for Colombia, like Miami.
For this World Cup?
Yeah, yeah. You know, this is the
or Copa.
This is the thing I think we need to adopt. But Colombia had I think it was Ryan. I forgot his last name, but like a reggaetonero. He's like, Mami, prende la radio.
That was their official song.
That was their.
I didn't know they had an. Yeah, I guess everyone has an official song.
But this is the thing, is that this is the thing that the U.S. should adopt. Yeah. Why don't we have, you know, Jay-Z and Alicia Keys
there's no musicians in the U.S.
making a USMNT banger sure. to get ready for
Miley Copa. Cyrus. Yeah, where is it?
Okay, the Hawk Tour, girl. Can you sing?
For sure.
Like, somebody.
Let's get a Shibuzi on here.
Let's get our greatest ambassador. To get on board.
This is how we unite.
Because even the guy, he's in the locker room dancing with the players like after matches, and it's like, yo, they have this dope ass track,
yeah,
to get everybody hyped up, and it's like, yo, why?
It's coming home.
It's coming home. I mean, it's like they need a remix at least, right? Make me something.
But at least they have a song. We just played a national anthem and everyone's like, quiet.
But it's coming home ain't slap like that. Like, you know, we need something.
Well, it's Euros versus Copa America. This is the difference.
And so it's not a surprise. I'm just saying, it's just like, you know, I would love some of that. That would be really dope. So, but Colombia had every opportunity, I think, to or were sort of built to at least be able to give Argentina. I mean, they gave him a tough time, but this is another one of those, like, sometimes some teams just have a little bit more focus, a little bit more heart, and are just, and not to say Colombia didn't. You know, because Colombia is my second nation. You know, I love.
And they're coming for you right now.
But
you hear that sound?
You know, it took until the 117th minute before we got a goal from Lautaro Martinez, and the goal. I mean, the goal in itself. It you saw how tired everybody was. Everybody's just like, they're done.
They do their little runs and then everyone would sit down and be hurt and then be like, why are other people still trying? Right. I thought we all agreed we were done.
I mean, and if we had a little meter and to be able to see like who's the most tired and exhausted, like it was so evident, especially in that extra time. The fullback Mojica, like, my man put in he had a great tournament, one of the best year, but you could just see, it's just like, bro, I'm done. Yeah. I'm done. And then the goal, who I don't know who it was. I don't know if it was Sanchez or Cuesta.
I think it was Cuesta that chased into midfield.
The midfield. And as you saw that decision, it's just like, bro, let them take a shot from 25 yards out. Like, you don't need to press that hard right now. Everybody's exhausted. And then the build up and setting the ball up for Lautaro. And it was just like, it's those margins of just like, you sent the pass was so perfect that he took one little touch, set it up right in front of himself. So it was similar to the Julian Alvarez goal, the long ball from DePaul, that it was just like, these guys can do that. And then a player like Lautaro, who is fresh, to have that guy.
Yeah, he comes off the bench in extra time. He's only coming off being voted the best player in Serie A.
Yeah, yeah.
Having been a Golden Boot winner last year when they went to the Champions League final. Oh, we have to give him a
few minutes.
We're gonna bring Paredes in. He's just the starter at Roma, and then, I mean, shout out to Colombia and shout out to Juanfer, but like, you're bringing Juan Quintero off the bench and Quintero's like, I didn't realize this game counted. I thought this one was for fun.
It's funny because like, I love Juanfer as well. He's great. I think he's
at River.
He's at River, right? Yeah, yeah. And Colombia has a couple guys that, Juanfer is one of them, that are just, they sort of like, built like dudes that you might just see walking around in North Bergen. But it's not exactly a dad bod. It's not full dad bod, but it's just like, it's a like, oh, this is a bigger build than we're sort of used to seeing in a soccer player. But my man has all the sauce. I mean, and we saw that touch he took that bounced it over, DePaul. So he
hasn't played in this tournament. It's just, there are some people where I watch them play specifically sports. And it's like, because I would never want this guy in a workspace otherwise. Yeah, yeah. Where you're like, you're so blindly confident that you will do the dumbest thing.
Right, right.
But like, we're going to win sometimes because you're going to do this thing where it's like, he comes off the bench in the Copa America final against Argentina, the reigning World Cup champions. He has not really played. And he's like, oh, yeah, in the middle of midfield, I'm just pop this ball up. And he just beat guys. He like immediately is pulling the strings running the game.
I know.
He's like, James, don't worry about James. Yeah. He's here now.
He's taking the corners. He's doing everything. Yeah, yeah. It was great to see. And in that extra time, especially, you could see that if Colombia just like set up a couple passes a little bit better, a couple getting it out of their feet, like they could inside the box.
They didn't look like they looked like the rest of the tournament.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you play Panama, so that's like nice, but even against Uruguay for large stretches, even down a player, but especially in the group stage against Paraguay and Brazil, good teams, like they were moving the ball quickly. They had clear ideas. They were getting Diaz isolated in space. He's taking players on. I thought he really struggled in this game. I think you saw a bit of the effect of like how hard they had to work to get over Uruguay. Plus, that was one day later, so they had one less day of rest. I think you saw a bit of like Diaz played up top for like 30 minutes in that game by himself, just chasing balls. So I think you saw a lack of spark for Colombia that wasn't there from the rest of the tournament performance, and Argentina just stayed the same.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the defensive work from Argentina was remarkable. I said this before, or especially when I saw Argentina play live, I was like, Rodrigo De Paul is, he might as well be N'Golo Kanté, but the dude is literally everywhere. I'm just like, where is this? Does he play? I don't watch Atletico that much. I'm like, is he like this? Because my man was a dog out there, and we saw that throughout the entire tournament. They clearly say, look, Messi's not going to do a lot of defending. We know that. So we need one person to run two times the amount of, for to cover for Messi. And I thought Rodrigo De Paul did it, Enzo Fernandez as well. But then also Lisandro Martinez, who gets absolutely hammered by Manchester United fans, the media and everything. I'm just like, they don't win that game if my man is not risking his life stopping crosses, stopping shots, throwing. You know, towards the end of the game, the like fight.
But once Borja came on, it was like, just so you know, everyone's coming out with a bruise. Like Borja has arrived.
So that him and Christian Romero as well, who sometimes gets criticized, by.
I was sitting in a room of people who are all like, the Christian Romero red card is the safest bet of the day. Like, he's flying into tackles, and he was fantastic.
They were both spectacular. I mean, and not even, there's no exaggeration in what I'm saying. They were both spectacular, and not always, not always the fastest, not always anything, but knowing when, even the set pieces. I had said Colombia was going to win, and I thought they were going to win on a set piece. Yeah. And Sanchez had a header that's going in, and I forgot who it was who bumped him. They didn't jump. They just backed into him a little bit. And, it's the difference. If you use your arms to the push, it's a foul and it's a pen. But it was like he backed his body into him because he knew he had no chance to get to the ball.
And it was a very similar play to the goal Lerma scored against Uruguay, which no one gets contact on him and he bounces it into the corner and gets you the winner.
And just that little push to Sanchez and sends the ball over the bar. And that's what Argentina did. They just held on long enough because you knew they would probably score.
They're gonna score. There's no game in which they get like shut out.
Yeah.
And even we saw against Chile, it takes time against Peru, rotated team. It takes a little bit of time, but like it's coming eventually. And I think this was a situation as well off Copa America in 2021, off of World Cup, where it's like they know if they maintain this performance, they're going to win.
Yeah.
Whereas for Colombia, it's a little bit like, how good do we have to be to take down Argentina? Like there's an unsure nature there, as well as a lack of confidence of like, no, we are good enough the way we're set up. And like, I think you see that as the game goes along, where Colombia, I think, recedes and Argentina just stays the same. But the opening kickoff, Argentina kicks it off, plays it back. I think Emi Martinez comes all the way out to pick it up, and Argentina just stands there. And it's like, if you guys want to come press us, you can. If not, we'll wait till penalties. Yeah. And you're like, we're coming off a Euros game, which is like Nico Williams scores 90 seconds in the second half. You know, everything's a dynamic run, whatever. And it was like, oh, whoa, this is different. And I think there was large stretches like that. And Colombia didn't know how to get the tempo to what they wanted it to be. Whether it's like, well, are we going to press? Well, if we press, now we expose ourselves. We've got Alvarez over the top. You still have Angel Di Maria. Like, he can still get into space and kill you. And I don't know that Colombia ever really had an answer for that. And they don't have enough, especially at center forward, where they're going to beat you on half chances. Like, they need five chances to score one goal. They need to be overwhelming, and they couldn't do that in this one, which sucks because they were the most fun team this summer. Like, they were the party.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so disappointing. I mean, a lot of my Colombian friends, I'm just like, it's just heartbreaking because, like, what, their first final in 23 years.
They've been to four of the last five semis, I believe, at Copa, and they've not won. They hadn't won any of the semis before this. Yeah. And now they've lost the final. They've only won one trophy ever. 2001 Copa they hosted. And it's like, Colombia, one of the tough things for them is when they're down, they're like out of the conversation. Yeah. And then when they're up, they're in the world class. That has only happened three times since the 90s, or including the 90s. Where, like, when Argentina's down, you're still like, well, Argentina could win this. You never know. So it's tough for Colombia, and it's tough because they had their chance here. And it's not like a young team where you're like, oh, well, next time everyone's going to be 2 years older and like everyone's going to be loaded. It's like Lerma and Diaz is in his prime, and they brought a few young players that they played off the bench. But like, of the starters, it was a lot of weird misfit toys that just everyone.
Richard Rios is a hunt, but what a
Cordoba getting starts every game, doesn't score, doesn't do anything. It's like it was a very weird group of players.
Sure.
Santi Arias back from the dead.
Yeah. And then, you know, then Chicho Arango just crushing it in MLS. Like, let's go. Could have been useful here.
You guys like goals?
Kind of know a guy that does that. But yeah, Richard Rios was like an interesting, because he's like, he plays in Brazil, and they kept pointing out like that he's like a futsal guy, and he just like carries himself a little bit differently. Like, he carries himself like he's a Brazilian that happens to play for the Colombian national team, and it's just like, you're just like not sort of used to seeing that. But it was like entertaining, to say the least. But yeah, disappointing. So unfortunate result, obviously, for Colombia, but Argentina to do this, to do the Spain, you know, Copa World Cup Copa, it's. Messi leaving the game, I wasn't even that worried, because I'm like, he's kind of a liability. It's kind of like good that he's not playing, because you know, he was obviously dealing with the injury, but he's not himself, and it is very evident. But the game started late, so we'll go through all those shenanigans. Game started late due to security issues after the game. So before the game, so the. I've been hearing a lot of stuff, right? So, and we can take a quick look at some of the madness. I mean, we're looking at right now the people that are trying to.
We start with people trying to climb through an air duct to get into a stadium.
Yeah, this is a tactical manager on Twitter who had gotten this footage of people, a bunch of fans, trying to climb into what seemingly is an air vent. To get into Hard Rock Stadium.
It has got to be 1,000 degrees inside of that thing, because they're not pumping AC into an open stadium in Miami. So it's like, I don't know what that thing leads. First of all, no chance I'm getting in an air duct without knowing where that thing pops out.
Without it, you have to
get me out of there ASAP.
You have to so desperately want to watch a game of soccer that I had tweeted this. I was just like, at this point, if you're given this option, or just watch the damn game on your phone in your car. Bro, turn on the AC in my car and let me just watch it. I'm just like, I'll take the L. But look, I'm assuming the majority of the especially of the people that we're looking at did not have tickets, and they're breaking a couple reglas to try to get in there. So we don't support that. Obviously not cool. It's incredibly dangerous. Yeah, you know, there's no security checks, and anything could happen. Luckily, you know, I haven't heard any reports of any death or injury or any severe injury. So we're generally lucky that that is the case. If that you know, it ends up being the case. So, but I mean, there's no, we're not, you're not listening to this show for us to tell you the obvious thing to not do that. It's incredibly stupid. The moments that are really the worst is looking when you see like the you know, there's a fear of people being trampled,
crushed up against barriers,
heat exhaustion, yeah. And you see the pictures of like children like sort of gasping for air and trying to like gather themselves and stuff like that, and so that's ridiculous. But then the one that is like funny is this dude. I don't know who you are, man, but this is you're famous now. Obviously you didn't have the Columbia jersey at home, so you were like, let me wear the yellow, yeah. Red Bull. Was that the second away kit or third kit?
I don't remember. Something like that.
But my man, not only are you getting in the stadium and sort of breaking in, and you see the barricade fall over, but you have a dog with you.
And a little, this is the most Florida thing I've ever seen. And you know he's out there being like, can everyone be careful?
My dog is here.
Don't crush the dog. Like, watch out. And you're like,
oh. He doesn't like it when people are loud around him.
He doesn't do crowds. And it's like, hey, you know what? Maybe you shouldn't bring a dog to the game.
You don't bring the car. You don't bring the dog in here. You don't leave him in the car either.
No, I get that. You should probably not have brought the dog to the stadium.
But you don't bring the dog. You leave him at home. You go, you find a doggy daycare. You do something.
Yeah, get a babysitter.
And then this dude is, essentially a meme now.
And when you watch the video, there's a video that.
Yeah, this is we're going to look at that right now. Yeah, no.
a little run-in. Yeah, so this one police officer looks like is like trying to pull kids out, like you said, and then the stanchion falls down, and then the dog just comes sprinting across.
The dog starts sprinting around, and clearly because the dude falls on the ground. So yeah, we're looking at it here, and then look right there. You see the guy back there, and security's trying to stop people from,
and he's like, "I gotta get in. My dog's in there."
But then the wildest part, and you see children, and it's just terrible scenes. But then, what's this lady? This lady, I think she's looking for the dog. And I hope that's the case. But it feels like you shouldn't have even been in this situation because you shouldn't have brought the dog. Just so. Absurd and you know,
it's Florida, baby.
It's Florida, but people travel from all over to come to this. And
it's a big, this game had heavy Florida energy. Everything that was going on.
This is just.
I'm surprised this game wasn't played in an open Jeep with no shirt on, being just classic Florida.
So it's obviously something you hate to see, and then blame is sort of going everywhere. Yeah, it's
we're at fault as well. I've heard it was Christian, but
yeah,
but that's rumors and. I gotta
come up with an alibi. So this is, everybody is sort of blaming, a lot of people are like, the U.S. shouldn't be able to host the World Cup. Look at what happened here. But this is CONMEBOL wanted to host the Copa America in the United States as they've done before, because they know, we can charge people in American dollars.
Money.
We don't have to fill every stadium. You know, the money's the money. The money's coming in. So we all know there was a lot of financial incentive to host this tournament in the United States. And this is CONMEBOL hosting this. From everything I've heard, is the match day sort of experience of like getting to Hard Rock was very not the same, was very dissimilar to what it's like when you go to a Dolphins game or when you go to a college football game there. There's plenty of events happen there that don't have this kind of, absurdity. And little things from like, were they checking tickets before people got into the parking lot? CONMEBOL put out a statement before this saying like, hey, if you don't have a ticket, don't come to the game, which also kind of ticked. You're like, why do you have to say that?
You like, agree. Because I saw that come out and I was like, yeah, no, for sure. Also, like, you have to pay your taxes once a year. And like, if you're no longer breathing, we think you might be dead. Like,
we know that's
yeah. Sorry, I wasn't going to show up to a flight with no ticket and be like, where's my seat?
So the fact that they said that
means that they have an idea that something might be an issue.
Something might go wrong.
Or this is an issue that goes on. I will say one of the things that's interesting is like, can the U.S. host? And it's like, this doesn't happen at other U.S. sports. Also, this happened at Euros, what, 3 years ago? Happened at Champions League in Paris, I believe. Unfortunately, you see violence across the world at soccer stadiums. So the whole, like, the first reaction being like, the U.S. is going to host a World Cup. They're not capable of it. It's like, I'm pretty sure you're capable of it. It clearly was a failure of planning and understanding and purpose. But I've heard a lot of people say like, oh, like, it, you know, classic, oh, Americans don't know soccer. It's like, well, I think maybe if thousands of people show up to a game with no tickets and bum rush, like, I think the British authorities know soccer.
Right.
And who showed up to the 2021 final and like got in.
Exactly.
I think there's like kind of some of it's unavoidable. I've heard the talk about the perimeters, which I've been to 3 senior World Cups. And the last 3 were in Qatar, Russia, and Brazil. They operate a little differently, Qatar, Russia, and Brazil. There are parts of the government structure in those places.
Yes.
It's a little different than what we do here. And I think part, like, I was in Manaus, and like, I think they push people out of their homes around the World Cup stadium, like when the games were happening, for the to create the safe zones.
Wow.
And you have to like pass through these safe zones to get into the stadium area. And it's like,
there's something to, what I haven't enjoyed seeing is the like, all these Colombians are savages and blah, blah, blah. And like, and you know, some of that has been targeted to Argentinians as well. This is not the time for like racism and just like, it's just like this, we know soccer we know the fan bases are passionate. And yes, a bunch of fans who don't have tickets that are trying to bum rush in, that there should be layers of security to not even sort of be in that situation. And that is Conmebol. They know that.
Clearly, right.
They 100% know that because they put out the statement of like that, oh, this might be even a possibility. So then that's when you have to make people go through a couple, 2-3 different layers to finally get to the gate. What I've sort of heard, and shout out to Mike Ryan Ruiz, Levitard Show, he had mentioned this about that the experience normally for him when he goes to a college football game at Hard Rock is from basically once he gets off the exit to go to the stadium, it's about 15-20 minutes to get to his seat. It took him 2.5 hours. So there's something really, really went wrong in whatever protocol they had.
But you were saying before we started, you went to Copa America here.
Yes, at MetLife.
And they checked tickets before you got to the security gate?
They checked to see if I had a ticket before I could pay for the parking pass. So I also did get there pretty early, like maybe 2.5 hours early. Clearly some people got there even two and a half, 3 hours early. We even have friends, journalists, Felipe Cardenas, who also so many issues as well. So it didn't really matter what time you got there. You dealt with the same issues where they basically to stop the fans from trying to bum rush, they would close gates entirely. So as soon as you do that, people try to find another location.
Or people in the back don't know. That's the really scary part about crowds. And the reason, if you can go and look this stuff up, there's, I don't know. So I have people that work in this world, so I learn about this more. But the way you like build stanchions and set up entrances and exits and all this stuff, it's all built for plans. Like when you show up to the airport and you're like, I got to walk back and forth 19 times to get to the security gate and no one's here. All that's built so in case the crowd comes, you slow the speed of the way people move, because in those moments, that's where that crush happens. Because people in the back don't know or don't care and are starting to push. Then you're stuck. The next people push and it goes and goes and goes. And none of that was set up. And it's odd to hear that your experience at Copa America the same year in the same country was different than this one. And that's the part where I think you get into like who was like really organizing, who was really focused on these things, and how professional was it. And that part I think is worrying and scary. I think part of one of Felipe's comments, and I think some other people were like, well, this isn't really what the World Cup will be like because they're different people using different agencies and groups and all this stuff. But like, if you know you need this in New Jersey for a semifinal or a group stage, Do you not need it in Miami as well for the final?
Of course. Yeah. You would imagine in Florida it would be more secure and there would be a little bit more, prepared. So it kind of
makes... you're coming out of the semifinal and what happened with the Uruguay families and like you saw the energy in that stadium, but also like what could happen and you're not like...
The reason it's like generally weird is like this usually does not happen. That's like when it comes to sporting events, it's probably one of the few things that America kind of really does right. And so consistently and so many different types of sports. And, you know, these college football stadiums like, get 105,000 people or whatever. Like this is our sort of bread and butter. And when a foreign confederation is out here to, you know, you want to put on the tournament. My thought is like CONCACAF was probably like, hey, use these guys. These are our guys. And we all know you work in any sort of industry. If you have any expertise and somebody's trying to get into it, you're like, hey, I know a guy does this. It's going to be great. And Como was like, hold on. My cousin.
What if we didn't?
I got a cousin who's really, he really feels like he can oversee the whole CONMEBOL Copa America security operation.
Listen, I don't know if you've watched the Copa America game, but Alejandro Dominguez is president of CONMEBOL. I know that because he's shown at every game and they put him on screen at the exact same time and go, President Alejandro Dominguez. So maybe he's got a cousin out there.
Did you see, speaking of Alejandro Dominguez, who I've never
thought about before. For in your never life really. Until Copa America when you were forced to?
Did you see the clip of him getting
I don't know that was him. I thought that was the Argentine.
Oh, okay,
FA
maybe
president.
Okay,
so but it was one, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know.
He had a sweat towel guy.
Yeah, there was a
as a noted sweater. I can tell you it's normally a job I do myself.
Who this person was. I found it. Okay. So this is Argentine Football Association president Chiqui Tapia,
which is a great name by the way.
I love my man Chiqui, who apparently has a guy who is wiping the sweat off of the back of his neck.
I would say as a noted sweater.
Okay.
I think there's a cold towel situation.
Interesting.
Because you don't hold the sweat towel. You do a quick wipe and get away. This is definitely a cold towel
situation. Got it. So it's the ones
that
you...
It's a bit of a spa situation. Trying to cool the body temp.
But this is pretty wild. To have this... This is the kind of thing where... It doesn't matter how successful I become. It doesn't matter how rich I become. I will never let anybody do this for me because there's something to it where I'm just like, I can't feel like I have a peasant. You know what I mean? I feel like I have this serf who is here to do it. The man could probably make $500,000 a year.
He
probably does. But it's just like, there's nothing in me that will allow me to have a person do this for me. And this is one of those things where just like, you know what? The rich are too rich. You know, the upper class are just, they've gone too far.
I'm excited for us to run this clip into the video of you and Chiqui in the suite in 2026 World Cup final. Cooligans have gone huge. Yeah. Now they're in the suite, 200K. And Christian's like, listen, I'm helping the economy. A small business owner right here.
I'm going to tell Chiqui to wipe the sweat off my brow.
That's the ultimate win.
This is crazy, bro. I've never seen anything like this. It's just too much, bro. I mean, I don't know. I feel bad. I feel bad for the guy. He doesn't have to do this. He doesn't have to, but I don't know.
He's passionate about his job.
There's something, I see something like this and I get this like alpha male grossness. So I'm just like, as a man, I would never. I'm like, I'm not even.
We're not descending to those depths.
I'm not even that guy, but I'm.
I run this way.
It upsets me so much.
Well, it's also one of the. I mean, there's so many things happening here, so like it's hard to. But it's just one of those things where I mean, the tweet is about how out of touch it is. Where you always hear this about. The Argentina face specifically, but a lot of like sport in South America of just like how disassociated the people who are in charge of it are from human beings, not like the average human being, anyone. No one else in the world is doing that. Like Sidney Portillo Cohn is not having someone wipe, you know, go sweat towel. It's just like, that's not how human beings operate. So that part's always wild.
Bro, they need to stabilize the currency in Argentina quickly, bro. This is bad.
Yeah. This is what you get Chiqui instead.
All right, let's wrap up there, everybody. An incredible weekend in international football.
We didn't even do his Messi done.
Oh, that's right. Oh, you know what? We didn't even show Messi's ankle.
Let's show Messi's ankle. Let's end on a high. Let's show a swollen ankle.
Let's show Messi's ankle. Are we going to not show his ankle?
Gross. I can't believe you went full screen on that. That thing is ballooning.
This is great. And I've never, if you watch the slow-mo of his ankle, this was during he was trying to cross the ball.
Yeah, it was the first half. He played through it for a bit.
And I cannot believe he did. His ankle rolled inwards. Rolling your ankle side. We've seen Steph Curry roll his ankle sideways all the time to, outwards. And he rolled it inwards, which sort of just suggests. We always talk about Messi's. Let me remove the foot, everybody. Sorry. How long am I going to keep the damn foot?
Also, the first comment is obviously disgusting. And I was like, I'm not going to comment on it, but it's up there.
No, I hate that. Well, it is what it is. What are you going to do? We always talk about Messi's like body, lower body of gravity, and this is how he can get right around players.
Shifty quick.
And then you see the torque that he put into that cross and into his plant leg. And maybe this is also the pitches for Copa America have been, admittedly.
Although I would assume, so this was a learning experience on every game where you're like, I wonder what the field's like here. I think there's a grass. Or maybe it's turf and they rolled it over. Because some of these stadiums are grass stadiums. So there was a few that were better.
I think all of them, they rolled the turf over.
Even if it's like an NFL stadium with normal grass?
I think so, because you saw the lines and you saw the seams on this field. Yeah. So I
didn't realize they did it for every game.
I think they did that.
But also, the Dolphins might play on turf because they're a trash team. So you never know.
But I think they did that to have it uniform. So every stadium, every team is playing on the same.
If it's bad, the common denominator is the worst version.
They're like, no, we can't make it uneven, so everybody has to play.
The Sporting Park thing was crazy. Peru, Canada, and Sporting Park, they had to move the field in because the fields are smaller.
Yeah.
And Sporting Park is a soccer-specific stadium. You could see the box that's normally there. We spent 30 years talking about building soccer stadiums, and then you have to convert it into a football stadium to host the game.
They wanted to play the games in NFL stadiums, and this is what they get. So, again, Comebol, this is what they chose to do. Anyway, you saw the amount of torque that he put into his leg as he – the fact that it bent in – his ankle bent inwards is crazy to me, bro. I've never really – like, it's such a rare injury. I'm as an ankle roller. I roll my ankle all the time. It literally just happened the other, maybe 4 or 5 months ago that I'm still kind of recovering from. No. Playing. It's happened on the street as well. Like, if I'm wearing, this happened to me. Sneakers that don't have, that are, soft cushions, but, don't offer a lot.
For sure. Like, they got the puffy bottom. Yeah. Like running shoes that no one should actually run in.
It's but the ankle support is not really strong. They're comfortable. And it's like I step on a crack on the street, tap it all the time. I roll my ankle and I'm just looking like I shot a three and the defender got under me and didn't let me
left. That's a foul. Come on, ref.
Just so embarrassing. So this injury is so rare and it just looked awful. The fact when the camera went to his foot, it's just like, bro, this is I know Don Garo was just like, bro, the All-Star game's in 2 weeks. What are you doing, Messi?
See you in Columbus, said no one. So I went to a Colombian restaurant to watch this game. Shout out to my Colombians. And they immediately showed him crying on the bench. And the laugh that went up was ridiculous.
I felt bad.
I don't care. So I felt bad because normally I feel bad for people when they get hurt. And I was then I was laughing at everyone laughing, and it was a whole experience.
There's something. My immediate thought is that we saw Cristiano Ronaldo crying at the Euros, and we saw Messi, and I didn't laugh at Ronaldo, but I'm like, I don't
know. It's way less sad. When Ronaldo misses a penalty and he's Ronaldo, way less sad.
Whatever. The bias is there. I'm admitting it. So anybody come at me if you want to. But when I saw Messi crying, I was like, ay, pobrecito, Messi. I'm like a little bit. He doesn't deserve this. Anyway.
Do we think he's retired from Argentina? You think this is his last tournament?
No, I think he's playing at the World Cup.
2026, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's there. So, yeah. I think he's sticking with Miami until that World Cup. I think after that World Cup, I think he's done.
I couldn't tell if he didn't announce retirement because Di Maria, he didn't want to take Di Maria's moment. But it's like, there's no way he's not going to have his going away thing.
Of course.
So, like, there's no, everyone's like, is this the last time? It's like, there's no chance Messi in 2 weeks is like, oh, by the way, no one celebrated me, but I was done. Like, you know what I mean? They're going to do a friendly, they're going to do like when LeBron retires or, I don't know, Kobe, and then everyone gives him a gift, but they're going to have to do it for international. So they'll have to go to every country. So it's like, no, we got to play a friendly in Spain and Senegal. And we got to go to South Korea.
I mean, the Federation is going to be like, yeah, this is going to be a great opportunity. They can make so much money. I mean, it's good on them, man. We all understand the business of it. All right, let's wrap up there, everybody. Thank you again for tuning in. David Goss, shout out to David Goss for coming through. Alexis will be back on Thursday.
Sucks for you.
I know it's gonna be brutal, but we appreciate David Goss and Christine Cooper, who filled in last week as well. And obviously, make sure to check out SoccerWise. Yeah. SoccerWise HQ
on socials. Yeah,
on socials.
SoccerWise, one word. Because I can't spell, so I don't know how to put spaces.
It's a dope project with people I love and support. So it's great to see. So keep crushing it. We'll be back on Thursday. Make sure you follow us at Soccer Cooligans on all socials. Like I said, Alexis will be back. And subscribe to the YouTube channel as well if you haven't already. Shout out to everybody watching here on Yahoo Sports, powered by One Football. We appreciate everybody. Take care, everybody. Peace.